The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Monday morning, everyone. We'll talk about booster shots on today's show. We know it's confusing what the FDA Advisory Committee came out with on Friday, and that was late in the day after our show. So we'll try to explain who would be in and who would be out, and the battle still going on over that before a final decision. Also, the global ethics of this decision. We have one of the leading experts in the field, Dr. Eric Topol, lined up for that today. We'll also have a call in on how you use the he, him, she, her, they, them pronouns in your own communication with people now, even if you totally identify with the gender you were assigned at birth. And we'll have a special call in within that for teachers. How do you address your students now before they express their pronoun preferences to you? And we'll talk about the latest developments in President Biden's attempts to be this generation's FDR with his human infrastructure and climate safety net bill, and how Democrats in Congress, including those named Manchin, Sinema, Swazi, and Rice, are making it more complicated, maybe for better, maybe for worse. But we begin with the crisis in New York City on Rikers Island. There was another inmate death on Rikers yesterday. Early reports are it's from natural causes, but it's the 11th in the last year, way more than usual. And that's just the latest example of an unsafe situation for incarcerated people and correction staff alike, at least those correction staff who are actually showing up for work, which is part of the problem. Governor Hochul took one step toward getting people out of there to safety on Friday. Advocates were also increasingly frustrated with Mayor de Blasio. We'll play some clips of what he said about the Rikers situation on this show on Friday, including what he will and won't do about it, and get a critique and other proposals that we'll examine from a leading advocate for reform. It's Corey Staughton, an attorney in charge of the Legal Aid Society Criminal Defense Practices Special Litigation Unit. Legal Aid has many clients at Rikers, some of whom we understand will be released under Governor Hochul's plan, some who won't. Corey, thanks so much for your time this morning as you try to manage clients in crisis and the overall situation. Welcome to WNYC today.
Thank you, Brian.
First, for people not following this closely, how bad is it?
Brian, it's really hard to find the words to describe how bad it is. The head of the Correctional Medical Service has said that the jail is incapable of keeping people safe. Public advocate Jumaane Williams, when he visited last week, said he's visited Rikers many times. He's never seen it this bad. As you mentioned, 11 people are dead. And although it's true this latest death was cardiac arrest, that's a man who contracted COVID-19 and had serious medical issues going in, which he and his lawyer, who works at Legal Aid with me, repeatedly asked for medical care for him when he was in the jail and repeatedly asked for him to be released because of those medical vulnerabilities, and he wasn't, and he wasn't given medical care. And, you know, we're waiting for the details, but it's really hard to imagine that that didn't contribute to that death. And that's the pattern of all these 11 deaths. We have a jail system that is simply not capable of keeping people safe, whether it's from self-harm or from medical crisis or from violence within the facility.
Let me play some clips, Corey, of Mayor de Blasio here on Friday and get your reaction. First, I asked him if he uses the same language that a number of lawmakers who visited the jail last week are using. This begins with my question. Do you agree it's a humanitarian crisis?
I agree it's a profound problem. And it has to be addressed.
So let's stop right there for a moment, then we'll pick it up and play the rest of that answer. I saw over the weekend, Corey, that people were reacting with disappointment to that particular response. Does it matter if the mayor calls it a humanitarian crisis, if he says he agrees that it's a profound problem?
I think it matters in the context of the mayor's really in his inaction. You know, he has declared a state of emergency, but he's not treating this like it's an emergency. The steps that he's outlined to take will do nothing to address the crisis. They, even under the most optimistic scenario, the measures he's announced that he wants to take will take weeks or months to make any difference to what's happening on Rikers Island. He's been called on repeatedly to reduce the jail population. Instead, he's overseen a system that has driven it to new heights and that day by day sends more and more people into a dangerous situation. And he does that under the guise of public safety. That's not public safety. And so if his rhetoric matches his action in his failure to understand that people are dying and his failure to take responsibility for that.
So let's go further into what the mayor and the governor are doing and not doing. The beginning of the answer that we played right there continued like this on Friday morning with what was brand new at that time.
And we have some breaking news on that too, which we've just heard now. I've had a series of conversations with Governor Hochul. And I want to thank her. We're just getting the news that she is acting to help us get a number of people out of Rikers immediately.
So what exactly, Corey, did the governor announce on Friday, and how much of a difference will that make in Legal Aid's opinion?
Yeah, so Governor Hochul on Friday signed into law the Less is More Act, which is a reform that we and others, other advocates, have fought for years to bring a measure of, to reform New York's parole system. We are a state, we have been a state, that sends more people back to prison for minor technical rule violations on parole, for non-criminal violations of parole than most other states, almost all other states in the country. And what the Less is More Act does, it does three things really fundamentally. It eliminates mandatory detention of people who are accused of parole violations. That's the one thing, and that's a fairly significant number of people who've gone into Rikers Island. It also sets graduated penalties for people accused of technical parole violations, and that will substantially over time, make an enormous difference in reducing rates of incarceration, both in jails but also in prisons, and the rate of reincarceration of people who, trip up on parole rules when they're trying to get their lives back on track after a period of incarceration. And on top of that, the Governor Hochul exhibited real leadership on Friday when she said, even though the act, as passed by the legislature, doesn't have to be implemented until March of 2022, she immediately ordered the release of people from Rikers who are held on those technical rule violations. And that's several hundred people who will be released under that rule. And that's the kind of decisive action that we need. And that's the action she could take as the governor. That's the lever that she has her hand on as the governor of the state of New York. And again, by contrast, the mayor has his hand on several levers where he could take similarly bold steps to try to take people out of this unsafe environment. But instead, he thanks the governor for pulling her levers and refuses to pull his own.
Yeah, and we'll get to more clips of the mayor refusing to pull various levers, clips from Friday's show. But I want to stop for a minute and highlight something that you just referred to that the governor said, which was that New York incarcerates more people for technical parole violations than any other state or almost any other state. I want to play a clip of the governor saying that herself. She calls it shameful. And listen, folks, in this clip, to the states that Governor Hochul compares New York with.
New York State incarcerates more people for parole violations than anywhere in the country. That is a point of shame for us, and it needs to be fixed. It's going to be fixed today. And it'll put us among the ranks of others, and this is almost so embarrassing to say that Georgia and Arkansas and Alabama, Louisiana, already ahead of us on this, okay? A little catching up to do here, folks. Okay, but we want to have people rejoin society.
So can you talk more about that, Corey? And my guest is Corey Starton from Legal Aid. As we talk about the crisis on Rikers Island, we'll open up the phones in just a minute for anyone on Rikers or anywhere else. When she says New York incarcerates more people for technical parole violations than any other state, and then she cites what we generally consider in New York to be very regressive states, Georgia, Alabama, et cetera. I mean, New York has a lot more people than any of those states. So what's the apples-to-apples comparison here, really?
Yeah, I mean, it is an apples-to-apples comparison. It's a rate of reincarceration, right? Not a population thing.
Uh-huh.
And And the reason we did that is that we have, you know, just for listeners who kind of want to get their heads around the system, you know, people serve their sentences for what they've done, and then they come back, and for many, many years, they are then generally under a system of supervised release, where the parole system sets sometimes really very draconian rules for how they can live their life, everything from where they can live to what jobs they can have or must have. Restrictions on who they can meet with, and requirements to attend parole meetings and to check in with parole officers and to report changes of address. And this is a population that is, you know, pretty often pretty unstable. You know, they lose jobs, they get jobs, they lose housing, they get housing. They may have a drug relapse or a mental health crisis. And for any number of reasons that are pretty understandable in the larger scheme of things, they're consistent with someone who's trying their best to get their life on track. People violate those rules, those technical rules. So maybe they miss a meeting with their parole officer, or they fail to report a change in address because they have unstable housing. And New York sends people to jail and back to prison for those technical violations. And this act addresses that by eliminating mandatory detention and rolling back the rate at which people can get sent back to prison for those kinds of technical parole violations.
So I was told that Mayor de Blasio actually has to approve the release of each of those 191 individuals covered under the governor's announcement pertaining to those incarcerated at Rikers for small technical violations. And I asked if he will do that, if he'll let them all go. And here's the answer, in which he reserved the right to not, as he said, who he would agree to release.
Anybody that does not pose an immediate threat, unless it's something like a technical parole violation mixed with other offenses, you know, violent or serious offenses. So I want to be very, very clear. It's a major qualifier, and I want to be blunt about that.
He wanted to be blunt about that major qualifier. If the individual was in for a violent offense and could be a threat to public safety, then he might not approve their release from Rikers, even if they were reincarcerated on a technical parole violation. Fair enough with the public interest, the public safety at stake, as the mayor might see it?
Okay, so I want to say two things about this. The first is that the mayor's comment there really reveals how little he's paying attention or to or understands the system, because those 191 individuals, those technical parole violations, are all people who have not been charged with any new crime. They are people who were in solely because of a technical rule violation that is non-criminal in nature. There are hundreds more people on Rikers Island who are in on a parole hold, who are there because the parole warrant was issued because of a new crime. And some of those crimes might be crimes of violence, and some of them are not. But that's a whole separate category. Those 191 people are there because they missed a meeting or did something that is simply not criminal. And so to hold up their release or think you're going to hold up their release is just a really ignorant thing to say. But the second thing,
if I understood it correctly, his argument was if they were originally incarcerated for a violent crime and then they were out on parole and they were being monitored, maybe those people have to be held to a stricter standard because of their original crime. And so if they commit a technical violation, this is the way I understood it anyway, he might be less inclined to release them. Is that the way you heard him?
Well, I'm not sure. You might be right, Brian, but even if you're right, that is not how the system is meant to work. You know, people serve their sentences for the crime they committed and then they're released. And the question is, do we think as New Yorkers, given how dangerous Rikers is, that being sentenced to Rikers right now has the potential to be a death sentence? The fact that someone missed a meeting with a parole officer, no matter what the criminal history is enough to send them back into that unsafe environment. And that just strikes me as the wrong way of approaching the question.
You wanted to make another point about that?
But it flows from that, because I want to talk a bit about this 11th death that we just had, because it's really, you know, this person, a client of Legal Aid's, was in on a technical parole violation. He was arrested originally, convicted of a drug crime. And he was in Rikers this weekend solely because he was caught smoking marijuana, which is a non-criminal offense. And so he should have been released. But he was still there when he died over the weekend. And, you know, I mentioned that because it shows the urgency of what needs to be done here, and that the mayor is not only refusing to consider releases of people who are, you know, to work for these programs, as many people have called on him to do, as you asked him about on Friday, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But he's threatening to slow down the release of people that the governor has stepped out and boldly said we need to release. You know, there are lives at stake. There's someone who has already died who was in that situation just over the weekend. And those are the stakes we're dealing with.
That is so sad and so infuriating. If that person was reincarcerated just because they were smoking marijuana, which, oh, by the way, is perfectly legal in New York right now. Listeners, we can take your phone calls on the Rikers situation. Anyone at Rikers who wants to use what phone call privileges you get this morning to give us a call, you are invited, 646-435-7280. Anyone with anyone close to you there or professionally involved in the situation in any way, correction officer listening right now, on or off duty, or called in sick, 646-435-7280, or anyone else for Corey Staunton from the Legal Aid Society, who has many clients there, including, as we just learned, the one tragically who died last night, 646-435-7280, or tweet your comment or question at Brian Lehrer. All right, one more clip of the mayor. I asked him about calls by advocates like you to use his power to release people for their health and safety, like he did at the beginning of the pandemic with many people, under what's known as 6A powers. Here's what the mayor said.
So we're not looking at 6A right now. We're looking at something that will achieve much, much more, which is these big movements we got here hundreds and hundreds at a time. We're also working with the state. There are people who were supposed to be sent to state prison long ago, and it didn't move quick enough. The state is helping us to expedite. That's another several hundred people. So we're asking judges also to use supervised release more on the front end when they're sentencing if it's a nonviolent offense.
So no 6A health and safety releases for now, like when the pandemic first began and they wanted to, you know, have less density in the congregate care setting. But all those other things, how satisfying or not is that answer to you?
Yeah, it's not enough yet, you know, and I think the mayor is right, and I agree with him, that we need to look at bail decisions that are being made by prosecutors and judges. That's a really important part of this. And we know, and using supervised release is an option. Also, not sending people to Rikers is an option. Some prosecutors are already acting on this. Over at the end of last week, Eric Gonzalez, the district attorney in Brooklyn, sent a message loud and clear that prosecutors' decisions about seeking bail on crimes need to be different in this environment, that when Rikers is this dangerous. And he's working with our office and other defenders to identify lists of people who maybe can be released, just as we did during COVID. And that's a really positive step forward, but it's not enough. You know, over the weekend, I was on emails with legal aid attorneys who are sending me stories out of Manhattan and other boroughs where prosecutors are still seeking bail on nonviolent offenses for people, including for people who are very sick, who should not be sent into this environment. And we need to see more change and faster from prosecutors. You know, a big driver of this crisis, a lot of people might wonder, why is this happening? And the answer is, it's a crisis upon a crisis. Rikers should be closed, or at least well on its way to being closed. That was the plan. And instead of bringing the population down to the levels that the mayor promised it would be brought down to facilitate the closing of this, you know, really dilapidated, you know, facility that is not functioning properly, the population has been growing. And part of that is the result of rollbacks of the bail reform measures that were passed in 2019. Those rollbacks gave more discretion to judges and prosecutors to send people to Rikers Island to set bail in their cases that is too high for most people to afford. And as a result, those people are incarcerated. There are over 1,500 people in Rikers right now that are incarcerated on nonviolent offenses, and that number has gone up and up since the rollback of bail reforms. And that's the result of decisions that are getting made in courts across the city, and that's got to change. And so the mayor's right to focus on that, but he can do more. And this issue of 6A, which is a legal provision that allows the mayor to release people who are sentenced to work release, which he did during the pandemic, and which his mayor's office of criminal justice own data suggests that those people who were released did not reoffend, in fact, reoffended at lower rates than the general population. This is a safe thing to do. It's a smart thing to do, and it could save lives. And he's not doing it because he's not focusing on it. He wants other people to make those decisions, the governor, judges, prosecutors, but he won't make those decisions himself to save people's lives.
Do you think, I don't know if you do political analysis, but do you think as the mayor apparently plans to run for governor next year and therefore has to appeal to many people who would vote in a Democratic primary upstate who may have either no connection to or just no idea about what things are like on Rikers Island and may have a certain kind of reaction when, you know, when they hear the top line of a story, do you think he's taking a more conservative approach than he would have previously because he's setting up this statewide run?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, political analysis probably isn't my forte, Brian, but I'll tell you, and it's dangerous to armchair psychologize people either, but I will say that the one thing, as someone who has been paying a lot of attention to this over the past several weeks and months and really years, you know, that it doesn't seem to me that the mayor is focused on this. You know, he has called it a crisis. Everyone around him has called it a crisis. The governor stepped up and taken dramatic action, leadership, and we're just not seeing that from him. And I don't know why that is, but you know, we need more. We need leadership, and we're just not seeing it.
And let's take a phone call from Dave on Staten Island. Dave, you're on WNYC. Thank you very much for calling in.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good. What you got for us?
I wanted to talk about, besides the fact that Rikers is completely broken, it seems that on the street, maybe because of bail reform and people anticipating COVID was going to be over, that judges and cops are very quick to arrest people and incarcerate them.
I saw from my screener, did they get this right, that you yourself got out of Rikers last Friday?
Yeah, I was released last Friday, and I was originally charged with a felony, and they immediately offered me a violation. So I never heard of that, but it seemed like in the courtroom, and there were a lot of guys inside, it seemed like they did not think they were going to be incarcerated when they got arrested.
Can you give us a firsthand report about what you experienced or what you witnessed there?
First of all, in intake, just getting into Rikers, a guy hanged himself, and instead of the COs coming in and getting him down, he was pepper sprayed.
Well,
immediately.
God.
And then there were a few beatings. There were a few beatings where some of the people dragged them outside the intake cell. And they left them there for about an hour and 10 minutes. And on top of that, none of the COs in intake had their body cams on at any time.
Dave, thank you very much. I hope things work out well for you. And Corey, we can't verify those allegations that he just made, but is that consistent with the kinds of things you've been hearing?
Yeah, you know, that story he just told, that's the second time I've heard that story. I heard that story from another client. Which, you know, again, I haven't been able to verify it, but that's the second time I've heard that exact story. You know, we have heard from clients that there are fights over bread. You know, let me explain when he talks about intake. So intake is the room you go into when you first arrive at Rikers, and it's meant to hold people for a little while they get a housing unit. It's got benches. There's no beds. There's no toilets. You know, and when we toured and advocates, elected representatives toured earlier this last week, they said that people are having to defecate into plastic bags and just urinate in the intake center because they're stuck there for days. That's what's happening. And there's no system for delivering food into intake. The food system is elsewhere. And people are just going into intake, they're meant to be there for a few hours, and they're staying there for days. And we've heard in some instances even over a week. And you know, that is one of the places where things are just breaking down. People are not getting access to consistent water, to three meals a day. They're throwing granola bars into the intake to feed people. You know, these are the stories we're hearing. And you can't, you know, when someone's intake, they haven't been screened for medical or mental health issues. That's a critical step in taking care of the basic needs of people who are going into a carceral setting, into a jail or a prison. And that's just not happening. So that, you know, that is one of the critical ways that things are breaking down at Rikers.
I think we're getting a phone call now from a current inmate at Rikers. Let's talk to Nathaniel. Nathaniel, you're on WNYC. Thank you very much for calling in.
Good morning. I'm a 61-year-old man. I got asthma. I'm a diabetic. And I've been trying to get to clinic for a month. Every time you ask the, you got to call the phone, and you got to ask them what you respond. And at the same time, when I call the clinic, they say I'm on sick call, but I've never been called. I'm sneezing, I'm blowing my nose, I'm coughing, and I got asthma. And I'm trying to get some help, and I can't even contact my lawyer because the phone system is so offbeat that when you try to answer the phone, people don't know that you got to wait a certain minute just to answer the phone. And the officers, you don't have no officers in here. Only time an officer come in if somebody's fighting or somebody's sick. The only way you can get to the clinic is sick. And the intake is so messed up. It's, you know, the hallways got dirt and trash all over the place. And they don't want nobody to clean up, but at the same time, they don't want to pay nobody to clean up. And it's wrecking. I'm at OBCC.
Nathaniel,
and I'm going through so much in here.
Stay there for a second. I want to see if our guest can get you some help as an individual, as well as address the overall situation that you're describing. And listeners, one of the things that I know from the reporting is that what Nathaniel describes is one of the central problems there. People who are sick, even if they have medical clinic appointments, are not able to keep those appointments because of the staffing shortage and other reasons. So, Corey Starton from Legal Aid, first of all, can you intervene or your people intervene to get Nathaniel to a doctor? Sounds like he wants to see
yes.
a doctor and needs to see a doctor. Maybe he needs a COVID test also, or who knows what. But secondly, can you address the larger situation that he's describing?
Yes, Nathaniel, if you can give the producers your name and your DIN number, and I will get that after
no problem.
This, I can make sure that we get you attention immediately.
Please, because
yeah.
I've been trying to get the sick call, and my head hurt, my throat hurt. And they don't know, they don't try to help you until you fall out. When you fall out, they take time to come get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nathaniel, can I ask you one more?
Go ahead. Yes.
I was just going to ask you one more follow-up question. I don't know how long you've been there, but have you been there long enough to see a change, a deterioration in the conditions that you can describe? And that's a long time. What's changed since then?
It got wrecked in here. I even got the intake worker right next to me, and he could tell you how bad it is in there. The only time an officer is going to help you if you're laying out on the floor, and when you lay out on the floor, they don't come on time.
Nathaniel, hang on. I don't want to use up your minutes before we can take your contact information. So I'm putting you on hold. Screeners, I think you heard our conversation about that. Please take Nathaniel's contact information if he wants to give it to you. I'm shaking, Corey. Man in his 60s, no less.
I mean, Brian, this is what it has been to be a legal aid lawyer for the last several months. I can't. We have a hotline from the jail into our prisoner rights project. And we also, you know, get emails from our attorneys who are the criminal defense attorneys who call our team to get assistance. And it has been overwhelming for months. I mean, you know, it's always a little overwhelming, but it's for months. And, if you'll just let me, I want to give out the number for our hotline, our prisoner rights hotline. So if anyone in Rikers who is there and needs help, or family members of someone in Rikers who needs help, that you can call 212-577-3530. That is the Legal Aid Society's prisoner rights hotline. And we there will be someone to answer that call and refer you to a paralegal or someone else at Legal Aid who will try to intervene if you need medical assistance that we are especially focused on right now in medical crisis. So that's a number you can call and we can try to intervene. But it is overwhelming. And it's, as Nathaniel was saying, you know, the issue is when the people aren't getting medical care. He talked about sick calls. So the way it's supposed to work is that if you're ill, you're supposed to let someone know. You go on the list and you get taken to the clinic because the doctors don't come into the housing areas and doctors and nurses on the island. But no one's taking them. And so Correctional Health Services, you know, the head of Correctional Health Services recently wrote a letter saying that the system had collapsed, that they cannot live up to their obligations, their ethical obligations to treat people on Rikers Island right now because the system is so broken. And again, we're sending people into this environment, a population that does have a disproportionate number of medical issues.
We have a few minutes left in the segment. I want to talk a little bit more about what's contributing to the conditions there and then a little bit about your recommendations, Legal Aid Society's recommendations for what can be done that we haven't already addressed. And I'm looking at the testimony that one of your colleagues gave before City Council last week, and some of the headline sections in here we've discussed, like, people are fighting over bread. That's a section. That's enough to make you shake. The collapse of medical care is another one, and we just heard firsthand testimony about that from our caller. Conditions in intake areas are deplorable. You described intake. I think for a lot of listeners to the show who had no idea what intake is at Rikers Island or another jail, now they know a little more about it and why people shouldn't be kept there for more than what's supposed to be the 24 hours if it's just benches and things like that, the extraordinarily high death rate. And one of the contributors that you cite, really two of the contributors that you cite to these conditions, look contradictory on the face of it on first blush. One of them is what you call the chronic overstaffing of the department, which you say jeopardizes security and safety. And then the next one is uniformed staff will not come to work. Probably a lot of listeners have heard about how many correction officers are calling in sick, that they're really understaffed there. So you're complaining about chronic overstaffing and chronic understaffing. Can you clarify?
Yeah. So it's important to understand that Rikers, the New York City correctional system has 8,500 corrections officers. And even at the height of the population in recent years at Rikers, there are just over 6,000 people in the prison. The ratio of corrections officers to people who are incarcerated is higher than any other jail in the country, including jails that are very comparable, like Cook County in Chicago and Los Angeles. So, you know, there's a narrative out there, which I think the mayor has embraced and others have embraced, that this is about we don't have enough corrections officers. And that's just not right. There is a problem that the corrections officers we have are not going to work. And the reason that they're not going to work is that the jail is broken. Because if I were a correction officer, I wouldn't want to go to work either. You know, this is, again, Rikers is a facility that should be closing. And instead, we're packing it full of people. And the correction system, the Department of Corrections has closed and then had to reopen buildings on Rikers and whole, you know, complexes on Rikers because of the booming population, because we keep sending people that we don't need to send to this terrible place. And it's a place that's making people sick. The rate of COVID infection amongst corrections officers and indeed amongst the incarcerated was as high as any place in the city, higher, you know, one of the highest places in the country during the pandemic. And even those who aren't sick, you know, are saying they're sick. And this is a problem of corrections officers are calling in sick. And nobody believes that all of the corrections officers who are calling in sick are actually sick. They don't want to go to work because it's a horrendous place. It's a hellhole. And adding more corrections officers into that mix is not going to solve the problem, because how long will it be before the new 600 corrections officers that the mayor has hired fall into the same pattern of not going to work because it's a terrible place to be? The answer isn't to, you know, it's like, imagine if your house, you know, the foundation was sinking and the windows all broke as a result. And you're like, oh, well, I better replace those windows and get new windows in there. I mean, you have to fix the foundation. And that's the problem. And that's why there is this kind of somewhat paradoxical, oh, there's too many corrections officers, but also not enough. That's the answer. And you can't fix the problem with more corrections officers. You have to fix Rikers. You have to close it. and you have to stop sending people there.
Well, the recommendation in your report to not just stop sending people to Rikers, but halt new admissions to the Department of Correction. That's the way it is in the testimony that was given by your colleague on Wednesday. Does that mean don't put any more people in jail, regardless of how serious a crime they're charged with? Because that's some of the pushback on legal aid and other advocates from conservative critics.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, what we need are intake limits, and that does mean making a different decisions under a different calculus. The reality, though, is, you know, as I mentioned before, there are 1,500 people right now in Rikers, at least 1,500 people, who are incarcerated on pre-trial, accused, not convicted, on nonviolent offenses. And there are another several hundred who are serving sentences for minor crimes of sentences of less than a year, and they've served some of that time already, serving what we call city sentences, generally for misdemeanor crimes. You know, there's room here to reduce the population and stop sending those 1,500 nonviolent offenses. There are new people going in on crimes like that, accusations like that, every day. We've got to put limits, and this is not unprecedented. We did this, it's been a long time, but this is a really unprecedented crisis. But in the 1970s, you know, New Yorkers of a certain age will remember the Tombs. And the Tombs got so bad that a court imposed intake limits on how many people could be sent there. Because the reality is, if you think about public safety, it is just not public safety to send people into an unsafe environment. That's just not public safety by any definition.
Hey, before you go, is the new progressive, I think it's fair to call him a progressive correction commissioner, Venturaldi, making a difference? We've had him on the show twice this year. The first time when he was an outside advocate like you, and then Mayor de Blasio appointed him correction commissioner, and he came on the show again. And it sounds like he's on your side on most of these things. Is he making a difference? Can he make a difference?
I think he is making a difference. I think his heart is in the right place. I think he's trying very hard. I think he's up against a system where we need really bold leadership to take the steps that are necessary to take. We're not seeing that from the mayor's office. He can only do so much, you know, and what we really need is we need to slow down the rate of incarceration and the rate at which we're sending people into his buildings, into the commissioner's buildings, because right now with the system that he inherited, that system is not capable of keeping those people safe. And that's the reality. So this doesn't need to last forever, but we need to take dramatic steps to fix this because it is a crisis. It is a humanitarian crisis of proportions that we just have not seen in nearly living memory in this city. And so bold action is really needed, and we're just not seeing it yet.
Final question. We continue our coverage tomorrow of the crisis at Rikers Island, as I said, with Brooklyn DA Eric Gonzalez. Anything you would like to hear me ask him?
I would like to hear how his communications inside his office, how he's implementing his announcement that he made last week. You know, he said the right things on, I think it was Thursday or Friday last week, about how we need to make decisions about bail and pretrial detention differently in this context of the crisis on Rikers. And I'd like to know how that's being implemented on the ground and how many people he's managed to keep out of Rikers Island since he made those decisions.
Corey Staunton, attorney in charge of the Legal Aid Society's Criminal Defense Practice Special Litigation Unit. Thank you so much for joining us today, as troubling as the segment has been. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.